Sehr geehrte Frau Lam, vielen Dank für die freundliche Vorstellung. Sehr geehrter Herr Baumert, Vorsitzender der Initiative Südliches Afrika. Sehr geehrter Herr von Welk, Vertreter der Friedrich-Naumann-Stiftung und Südafrika. Sehr geehrte Frau Dr. Turns vom internationalen Programm. Ich weiß nicht, ob Professor de Villiers hier ist. Vanavond ist er hier. Bye-bye, danke, Professor, dass er jetzt die Chance genommen hat, um für uns zu kommen hier. Und das ist für mich ein richtiger Riem unter die Hart, um das zu sehen. Und frieslich, frieslich, bye, danke. Ich kann kaum mehr Afrikaans reden, wenn ich Deutsch gesprochen habe, weil Sie sind so gleich, aber ich werde es gut versuchen. Sehr geehrte Damen und Herren, es ist für mich eine große Erleichterung, dass ich heute Abend auf Englisch zu Ihnen sprechen darf. Ich stehe vor der großen Herausforderung, morgen Abend eine Rede auf Deutsch zu halten, aber die morgigen Probleme können bis morgen warten. So today I'm in the very nice position of being able to speak English to you, and I hope everyone has got some English translation. And it would be very good if we could see my talk as an introductory discussion, and then hopefully afterwards have a really good engagement and have all the questions asked that I haven't answered. I'd like to begin this meeting, though, by sharing with you a little bit about meeting culture in South Africa, which I think could probably usefully be adopted here in Germany. When we do the introductions in South Africa, we end up by saying, all protocol observed, just in case we left anybody important out, and then nobody feels excluded. So what I can do is say here, all protocol observed. It is a great privilege for me to have been invited to speak here in chilly Berlin, but in fact it's very warm inside, and I would like to sincerely thank the Friedrich Naumann Stiftung for this extraordinary opportunity. You've just heard Frau Lam saying that in the first democratic election, we got 1.7% of the vote. And when times are hard, friends are few. But the one friend we could always count on, more than any other, and who has to share great credit for our success electorally, is the Friedrich Naumann Stiftung. They have been there in the most difficult times when the cause of liberal democracy seemed so hopeless in our country. And they were there believing that we could make the change that no one else believed was possible. And it is a really great honor for me to be able to speak on your platform here tonight. Thank you very much indeed. And then, of course, the South African Initiative of German Business, the Initiative Südliches Afrika. And I'd also like to thank SAFRI very much, Herr Wenzel, and Inisa very sincerely for everything they do for South Africa, for marketing and promoting the opportunities for business and trade between Germany and South Africa. And in fact, we've got a wonderful, strong and healthy and growing German presence in South Africa, very particularly in the province of the Western Cape. There are some suburbs that are more German, I think, than Afrikaans or English. Somerset West, Camps Bay, Hout Bay, and many other places where there's a very, very strong German presence and is most warmly welcomed, and business between our countries is flourishing, but we can still do more. Now, I was told that when I came here to give this talk tonight that people would know something about South Africa. So I could take for granted that you do indeed have some background understanding, and I hope that that is true. If not, please don't be concerned about appearing uninformed when you ask your questions, because I'm very happy to explain anything to you if indeed I can. South Africa is the history of major developments happening that were entirely unexpected. And so we take political commentators in South Africa a little bit with a pinch of salt, because most of our political commentators in South Africa spend all of their time saying why it is impossible for a development to happen. And then when it does happen, they spend the rest of the time explaining why it was inevitable. And one of the important things in South Africa is that, especially in our party, we have learned to ignore most political commentators. We read our critics very carefully. We sometimes learn a lot from them. Being liberals, we have to be open-minded to criticism and other views. But the big art in politics is to understand the forces that are moving society, to understand how to position yourself in those currents, to make the right decisions at the right time, and to ensure that you can get closer to the reality and use that inside knowledge to position yourselves to drive after a vote that is available, to be a good opposition, and then to win elections. And as Frau Lamm explained, we started at the bottom up and worked up, and now we're a party of government, not just of opposition. And it's been a thrilling journey, from a point of near death in 1994 for our party and our values, to the party that the governing party keeps warning each other about could become the government in South Africa. And I'll tell you tonight exactly how we're going to do it, but not exactly, because I keep some of our strategies to ourselves, but I'll give you the broad outline. And I will talk tonight on the subject that you asked me to talk about, which is leadership in the new South Africa, what now? I always bring three pens just in case I decide to write a new speech while I'm speaking. Leadership in the new South Africa, what now? Now, that's a very good question. And it's especially a good question on the eve of an event that has become known as Mangaung. Mangaung is as known in South Africa and in many parts of the world today as Polokwane was 5 years ago. Mangaung is a place in one of our provinces, the Free State Province, at which the ANC, which is the ruling party in South Africa, will hold its five-year elective conference in December this month, in fact, this weekend. And they start on Sunday and they have the crucial election to elect their leader on Tuesday. And you'll remember that in Polokwane, they replaced former President Mbeki with the current President Jacob Zuma. Now, in one way, the outcome of the election at Mangaung is certain. Jacob Zuma will win. He's got a built-in majority, and all the delegations that can be counted say that quite clearly. In another way, the outcome is not clear at all and could go in one of many directions, and I will discuss that a little bit tonight. Normally, the person who leads the ANC becomes the next president or remains the president, but that outcome is certainly not certain as we head into the election of 2014. Yes, President Zuma will be re-elected as the leader of the ANC on Tuesday next week. But that does not mean that he will be the ANC's presidential candidate in 2014. And between today and the election in 2014, which we expect to be in April, we will go through a watershed in South African politics, the course of which is not precisely definable, but the alternative scenarios are becoming increasingly clear. And it is in that space that the Democratic Alliance has to position itself to use this watershed to ensure that we turn what could potentially be a crisis into a great opportunity for South Africa and for our democracy. And I'm very confident that we will be able to do that. Many people ask, how is it possible that a man like President Zuma can be so uncontested as the leader of his party? He's presided over one scandal after another. Many people may know he has over 700 unanswered charges against him of corruption, of money laundering, of racketeering, of a range of other charges. And the latest scandal has been about his spending 250 million rand on the improvements to his private house. 250 million rand of public money on improvements to his private house, even though he has three very, very stately public homes. And people can't understand this and often ask me questions as to why that happens. Now, I'll talk a little bit about that. But one thing is clear, President Zuma lacks leadership. And the important thing that everyone needs to understand is that he was never elected for his leadership capacity. He was never elected for his leadership capacity. He was elected for other reasons entirely. He's a very charming man. He's a very warm man. He's a very engaging man. He makes everybody feel comfortable. He's nicer to me than anyone in my own party is. I often complain very hard in my own party about how nice President Zuma is to me. He was elected for those qualities because, primarily because, various factions in the ANC believed they could manipulate him, believed they could control him, and believed that in doing so, he'd be in a position to hold the party together, to hold all the various factions together because of his charm and because of his warmth. And the different factions, but particularly the left, believed that after Thabo Mbeki, they would be able to own President Zuma. And so during his presidency, we started seeing the phenomenon of what is called in other countries on our continent, state capture. We started seeing the start of the phenomenon of state capture. It's a phenomenon that will not consolidate itself. We will prevent it. But I need to explain what the phenomenon is so that you can understand precisely what is happening and why we will be successful in resisting it in South Africa, which was not the case in many other transitions to democracy on our continent. Darf ich meine Mantel ausziehen, bitte? Do you mind that? Es wird mir zu warm, danke. Now, state capture is a phenomenon in which elites in developing democracies capture all of the institutions of power in the state, in the private sector, big business, big unions, big government. And what the elites want is clients in all of those places so that they can be controlled in their interests. And the deal works like this. We will keep you in power if you keep defending our interests and ensuring that those interests are protected. And the network is absolutely central to the capture of state institutions and to the capture of all the other institutions that in a developed democracy are independent of state control. That's exactly what happened in Zimbabwe, centralization of power, cronyism, I learned the word Vetternwirtschaft, which I thought was absolutely wonderful, corruption, and then the criminal state. And Mugabe is just a figurehead for the networks of control that have captured the state and captured the private sector and captured all institutions to keep their network in power. And in doing so, have undermined any institutions that could potentially challenge that power base. But that, although we saw the start of that in South Africa and certainly big attempts to do that, can't be followed through for some key reasons. Firstly, our constitution is too strong. Secondly, our opposition is growing and we are winning elections. And thirdly and critically, the ANC is too divided. The ANC is too divided. And it makes it impossible to effect state capture when the ruling elite is so divided amongst themselves. And the war around the various factions trying to achieve state capture can't succeed. And at the same time, the opposition is growing. And at the same time, the institutions of the state are defending the independence of their own and other institutions, making that kind of scenario and that kind of outcome much less likely in our country than it has been in other failed transitions. But all of these factors also make it impossible for the governing party to govern, especially the fact of their very deep divisions. Let me give you two examples. One is the National Development Plan, which was developed in the office of the president by the Minister of Planning nationally. His name is Trevor Manuel. He's a minister in the ANC government in the office of the president, which makes him a very senior minister. He produced a plan with which my party, the Democratic Alliance, agreed about 80%. We said, this is a good plan. And I said immediately to Minister Manuel, it's an excellent plan. We will implement it in the Western Cape. Give us the opportunity to put this plan to the test where we can implement it. But it was completely rejected by the ANC's alliance partners, the South African Communist Party and COSATU, the Trade Union Federation, And so the government sits in a position of having produced a good plan that simply cannot be implemented because the ANC is too divided. And here we are, ironically enough, in the opposition party saying, this is an excellent plan. It will lead to economic growth and jobs. Give us a chance to implement aspects of that plan. And interestingly enough, the government is doing just that. Let me give you an example. Part of the plan is for a youth wage subsidy. And a youth wage subsidy is crucially important because our biggest crisis in South Africa is youth unemployment. You heard from Frau Lam that we've had a terrible education system, many, many young people coming into the economy, not prepared to work in it, without the skills they need. And the irony is that with all the unemployment we've got massive number of unfilled positions because the skills don't exist to fill them. And so we strongly support the youth wage subsidy that enables the state to subsidize the first-time employment of new entrants into the economy so they can find a foothold, advance, learn skills, and the incentives are there for business to employ them with less regulation than they would otherwise have to. That has been rejected by the trade union movement and by the South African Communist Party and by some people within the ANC. So we in the Western Cape have started our own version of the youth wage subsidy. And from the national government, we're getting over 100 million now to put it into effect. So I'm delighted to say that we have the wonderful opportunity of being able to implement some policies that are being rejected by the ANC's own alliance partners and many people within the ANC so that we can show that these policies do actually work. And the entire basis of our strategy is to demonstrate the difference between where we govern and where the governing party governs. And sometimes outside instances help us very much as well, because the United Nations have just produced a report comparing inequality in cities around the world. And they say that although inequality is still much too big in South Africa overall, which is absolutely true, they say Cape Town is the least unequal city in the whole country, and we've certainly made most progress with service delivery, with education, and with a range of other government services. And the point is, the outcome is there for all to see. The alternative governments that govern under different political philosophies, and that is what we have to demonstrate. Now, while the government is hopelessly divided, we are more united than we've ever been. We've just held a brilliant national congress. For the very first time, the Public Broadcasting Corporation gave us really good coverage for our congress. I think they see possibly a change of government coming, so they want to butter their bread on both sides. Who knows? But for the first time, we got really fantastic coverage. We had a big image shift during that Congress because 5 out of the 7 top elected leaders were black, and the majority of our Congress was black, and we're now positioning ourselves in an entirely different space in South Africa. And while the ANC is so divided, we are attracting people because we have a strong philosophical foundation that was described to you earlier as the open opportunity society for all. And the ANC has a strong Marxist tendency, a strong capitalist tendency, a strong trade union tendency, and a strong tendency of people who don't know what they are, except that they're after contracts and tenders and government jobs. And without that founding philosophy, it's impossible to hold together a coherent party. And so I can make a prediction here tonight and say that within the next 10 years, the ANC will come apart completely. All the political analysts in South Africa will tell you regularly why that can't happen, but I feel very confident in saying to you today that it will happen. The question is only how and in what way, because that will make an enormous difference to how we position ourselves and what we do. And as I gave you the example of the National Development Plan, it is true that political boundaries are completely outdated in South Africa today. And there are people in all the different parties who actually belong together in one strong centrist non-racial party that can become a majority. And so as the ANC comes apart in the next 10 years, so it is our job in the opposition to form the kernel, the nucleus, of a developing new majority, building a new majority in defense of the Constitution, in defense of non-racialism, in defense of a market economy and growth driven through a market economy, and in defense of an absolutely critical principle, and that is the separation of party and state. and the end of Vetternwirtschaft in South Africa. Now, the only thing that holds the ANC together is racial rhetoric and history. And the only thing they can unite about is, for example, draconian legislation like the secrecy bill that they're trying to push through to muzzle the press. And we've seen other very important developments, big and small, that will hasten the dissolution of the ruling party. Let me give one very small one, but it's a very telling one. As I was coming in the car, my chief of staff, Jordan Hill-Lewis, said to me, "I want to read you a quote from Desmond Tutu." And on his telephone, he read me that just recently there was a meeting at which Archbishop Desmond Tutu spoke, and Minister Trevor Manuel, who drew up the National Development Plan, was there in the audience. And Archbishop Tutu said to him directly, "You must leave the government, you do not belong there." And then the Archbishop also said, "I, as Archbishop Tutu, who, as you know, was famous worldwide for leading much of the struggle internally against apartheid," Archbishop Tutu said, "I am now praying for the downfall of the ANC government, just like I prayed for the downfall of the National Party government." Now, we wish that governments could change by prayer. Then they would have done that long ago in South Africa. But nevertheless, I do believe strongly in prayer, but the importance of Archbishop Desmond Tutu making that statement is that it makes it okay and acceptable for people to oppose the government, which is a huge shift in a developing democracy. And it's very important that a world-renowned black South African who was so in the vanguard of struggling against apartheid says that publicly and says that openly, and has also equally said that government only works where we're in government. And that's a very, very useful and helpful thing. But there are other big catalytic moments, really big catalytic moments, that are also part cause, part symptom of the dissolution of the ANC. Marikana was a very big one. Now, I don't know if Marikana is a concept that you're all familiar with. But in August, on the 16th of August, we had a terrible tragedy at a mine called Marikana in the Northwest Province, where people went on strike, and they eventually were shot, 34 of them, by the police on one day in a standoff that actually cost 44 lives over the period of a week. And it was the biggest crisis we've had since apartheid. And during that period, it was quite clear that the new union that had come up against the ANC-dominated union was mobilizing very hard, was being kept out by big government, big business, and the big unions, and in fact refused to fall in with the big union that has the sole monopoly on negotiation in terms of the law. And the importance of that was that the ANC and the attempt at state capture with big government, big unions, and big business, exemplified by Cyril Ramaphosa, who used to lead the union, who has close ties with government, and who's on the board of Lonmin, the mine at Marikana, it symbolized a rejection of that, the insiders and the outsiders. And so the important thing was that people stood up against it. And more importantly even than that was that just 4 weeks later, there was a by-election at Marikana in that ward. And for the very first time ever, the unthinkable happened, and the ANC lost that ward to a 32-year-old independent. And that is a very, very important catalytic moment, because that was one of the safest ANC areas in the country. And then just last week, something else happened which really caused a tremor in South Africa, where President Zuma has his private house, on which he has just spent 250 million rand of public money. There was also a by-election, and the ANC lost again to a party called the Inkatha Freedom Party, which is also on its deathbed. So it's very, very interesting to see that voters for the very first time are standing up and saying, no, we are not trapped or owned by the dominant party. We can make our own decisions. And it's been a very important and seminal moment, because up till now, we've had many crises and it never seems to impact on elections really at all. And here we have a situation where two major controversies and crises have been tested very quickly at the polls. And in fact, voters have taken the decision to vote against the ruling party. So these are all very, very good and very hopeful signs for democracy, but there are major challenges ahead. Now, what is likely to come out of Mangaung? Zuma will be the president of the ANC. The debate is who will be the vice president. That's the big debate, because the vice president in the ANC normally becomes the next ANC president, and therefore they assume automatically the next president of the country, which is a less and less automatic assumption to make. Nevertheless, the likelihood is that President Zuma will be elected at Mangaung with Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa. Now, Cyril Ramaphosa is a very important character. He played a very key role in the negotiation to democracy. He was the ANC's chief negotiator. He developed a very good reputation at that time. He was a very strong trade union leader under apartheid and was leader of the National Union of Mine Workers, the union that was rejected by the rock drillers at Marikana, which resulted in that standoff. And Cyril Ramaphosa then went into business and is one of the BEE billionaires in South Africa, very, very wealthy man, and very closely associated with leading figures in the ANC and leading figures in the trade union movement. So an archetypal insider. And then the other candidate is Kgalema Motlanthe, the current deputy president, who's lost favor with Jacob Zuma because there's been speculation until now that Motlanthe would stand against President Zuma for the presidency of the ANC. And that is not done in the ANC's version of democracy. And therefore, he was not available to do a deal in which he would remain the deputy president and President Zuma would continue as the president. And because he rejected that deal in the beginning, they brought in Cyril Ramaphosa from the outside. And we are likely to see a standoff between Cyril Ramaphosa and Kgalema Motlanthe for the deputy. I think that if Zuma can marshal his forces adequately, Ramaphosa will make it. But it'll be very interesting to see how that election pans out, and no one can predict precisely what will happen in a secret ballot, as they will have there. And so the outcome will be very, very interesting, but one thing is absolutely certain. Whatever the outcome is, it cannot heal the divisions in the ANC, it can only increase them. The risk of a Ramaphosa victory is that people start saying, well, wonderful, there's hope for the ANC again, and certainly the business community and the liberal media will start saying, well, the ANC can save itself. Let me tell you, it can't save itself. And it can't save itself because no individual can save a political party that hasn't got any political philosophy as its foundation, and that hasn't got any internal institutions to mediate the conflict between the big individuals. So the conflict will just intensify increasingly. And I have no doubt that the ANC will see Jacob Zuma as too much of a liability to go into the 2014 election with. And so it will most likely be the person who's elected as his deputy now that will be standing against us in the 2014 election, possibly Cyril Ramaphosa. But it cannot in any way deal with the huge contestations within the ANC. And the minute Cyril Ramaphosa gets elected, there'll be huge resistance from the trade union movement, huge resistance from the South African Communist Party, strong resistance from other people in the ANC, and the conflict will just look slightly differently aligned. That's all. The erosion of the ANC is unavoidable and irretrievable. That has risks, obviously, but it has enormous possibilities. And I'm a great optimist about South Africa, and I always have been, and with more and more reason to be so. It's amazing to me that we can have moved so far in such a short time. As Henry Kissinger once said to me, it took America 220 years to develop the democratic concepts. In England, it took 700 years to develop the key democratic concepts. And in our country, we're going to get it right in probably 20 to 30 years, and we're really well on our way to doing that. And we have far greater complexity because we have all of the different cultures, the languages, the backgrounds, the races, and everything else to add to the very complex mix, a mix in which liberal democracy has never triumphed anywhere in the world before. And we are full of hope that we will be the first. We have a strong liberal tradition that, although it has nearly died at certain times in our history, is stronger than it's ever been before. And more in a divided society, what people thought was impossible is proving to be possible, where people realize that if they can't govern, then their rights had better be defended by a constitution. And that is the best way to come to an insight of the value of constitutional democracy. People often say to me, how did the National Party turn from being a racial nationalist party to essentially now supporting liberal democratic values and a constitution? And I said, because when you can't hold on to power because of your nationalistic ethnic base, the only protection that you have is a constitution that prevents power abuse. And equally, when the ANC falls apart, and Julius Malema, of whom I'm sure many of you have heard, when he was kicked out of the party, and he went to try and give a speech at Marikana, and the police arrested him on the way to give that speech, I was the only politician in South Africa who stood up and said, you can't do this to him. He's got rights. You might not agree with what he says, but he's a South African citizen like everyone else, and he may go and make a speech wherever he likes. If he breaks the law in doing so, then you can take action, but you cannot take action against someone in anticipation that they may break the law. And he was amazed, because he's always been my biggest opponent. He said, but why is Helen Zille defending me? I said, I'm not defending you. I'm defending your rights, and there's a very big difference. I disagree with absolutely everything that you say, but I certainly will never try and stop you from saying it. And those are crucial concepts that have to come through in a developing democracy, which are taken simply for granted in established democracies. And I think as, for example, Julius Malema is frozen out of the mainstream, he suddenly gets the point of what we were saying all of these years, and that increasingly happens. I think whoever loses in Mangaung will be frozen out by the ANC. That's what happens in a closed crony system. People who lose elections get frozen out, they get purged from the system, and then it's critically important to ensure that people understand more and more why we defend a constitution, why we defend non-racialism, why we defend a separation between party and state, so that the state can serve all the people independently on the basis of competence and not the basis of political connections. So we have a strong liberal tradition. We have a free press in South Africa that's doing a brilliant job and that's fighting very, very hard against the abuse of power and against the new secrecy bill. And I believe that we have a strong enough judiciary. We currently, the Democratic Alliance, after 4 years, still fighting the National Prosecuting Authority for withdrawing the charges against Jacob Zuma, which enabled him to become president. And we fought those charges, and we fought Jacob Zuma's appointment of the National Prosecuting Authority, because the Constitution says he has to be a fit and proper person, and we went to court to prove that Zuma did not apply his mind and appointed one of his political acolytes and not a fit and proper person. We took that to the Constitutional Court and we won the case. Now we are driving through with a case to reinstate the charges of corruption against Jacob Zuma. We don't know what the outcome will be of that case, but we believe that at this stage, our institutions are independent and strong enough to defend our democracy, and that is a crucial, crucial point. And equally, we've got a strong economy. We've got a strong economy with separate and independent institutions that aren't dependent on the government to be able to survive, that do not have to fall in with government policy, that are prepared to fund the opposition and support us, and they do very well. And so all of these things make it really very important and very possible that we grow and that we move more and more from being a party of opposition to being a party of government. We are winning elections. Frau Lam explained exactly how. We've just had a recent election at the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University, 80% black students. The election there was for the Student Representative Council. The Democratic Alliance has a Democratic Alliance Students Organization, which contests elections at universities. In the election there, I'm almost embarrassed to say we got 75% of the student vote at that election. And I'm embarrassed to say that because as a Liberal Party, I don't believe that any party should get more than 2/3 of the vote. But I'll take what we can get, and I'm more than ever delighted that we are growing in that way amongst the young intellectuals of South Africa. We've got a wonderful young leaders program which trains new ranks of leadership and which is ensuring that we've got a great, great depth and wealth of leadership. 2014, I predict, will be the tipping point election. The tipping point election where the electorate sees that the ANC is not invincible, that their victory is not a given, that they can be challenged and beaten nationally at the ballot box. And then I think that that will hasten a complete realignment of politics, bringing together all of those who want to defend the Constitution, who want to build non-racialism, who want to defend a market economy, drive investment, create jobs, overcome poverty, and to see a strong and independent state triumph in South Africa. And I believe that by 2019, we will be the core of such a realigned political system, and we will have built a new majority. So I'm enormously, enormously positive about the future of South Africa. I'm enormously grateful to all the people who have kept their faith with us throughout the most difficult years. We will not let you down, because we are a great people who get going when the going really gets rough. We have been able to weather great storms in the past. We've been able to defeat the inevitable logic of our history, which seemed to be gearing towards a racial civil war. We escaped all of those things. We know how much there is to lose, and we know how much we depend on each other to build a great democracy. Thank you very much.